see that it's just no, I'm not doing this. Hello. Yep, this is not Yuna singing a song. This is actually Chris just pretending to be Yuna, but poorly, and on a guitar, not on a ukulele. And we have a very special podcast where it's just me and not Yuna. So we've both been traveling slash working slash moving, and we figured we'd get some airtime with this just me. We're going to call this episode, I'm going to call this episode Storytime with Chris, and well, I just turned 30, so I thought what a great episode could be reviewing basically all the lessons I've learned for the last 9 years in this industry and kind of creating my top 10 list of things I wish I knew when I had began becoming a developer. So let's go with that. Before we get too into this, I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Linode. Deploy a server in the Linode cloud in minutes, offering cloud computing plans for every workload, from simple web hosting to CPU-intensive needs like video encoding and machine learning. Linode offers a balance of power and price for every customer. If you sign up with a promo code TOOLSDAY2019, you'll get $20 off your next purchase. That's linode.com/TOOLSDAY. All right, let's get into this. One of the things I wanted to begin with was just the fact of getting a development job. So some of you may know this, but I don't have a computer science degree or any real background in computer science. I have a political science degree, which taught me almost nothing about web development, and yet I've been in this industry for most of the time. So I kind of went about it in two ways. The first I don't recommend, the second I do. My very first job, I did apply to Indeed, Monster.com, every kind of those job aggregation platforms possible. And I blasted out my resume to maybe, you know, hundreds of places. I was 21. I had a kind of some web experience, but not really. I mean, I had done some nonprofit work, and I had got a part-time job in college doing the website of our rec sports department. But beyond that, I didn't really have a ton of experience except for what I taught myself. So, applying through Indeed or Monster, if that still exists, I don't know if that still exists, doesn't really get you a high rate of success. I think a lot of people have experienced this fact, you know, they apply, it goes into the black box, and you hear from nobody. I got super lucky, and essentially it's just a numbers game. At this point, you apply, if you have a 1% chance of getting a callback, you apply to 100 things, you get one response. Not super great. So what I did with my second job, and to caveat, the second job is always easier than the first job. So, you know, even if your first job isn't perfect, I still recommend, you know, aspiring web developers, just get something on their resume. It gets you past the recruiters. And honestly, that's sometimes the hardest part of getting a job. But another way past the recruiters is to try to talk to somebody. Now, this is sometimes a pretty pithy remark where you're saying to me, hey, you know, of course I'd love to talk to somebody, but I can't. But there are a couple ways you can kind of bypass the black box recruiting hole. The first is go to the threads on Hacker News and Reddit where they post jobs. Now, I know many of you are saying Hacker News is, you know, a flaming pile of garbage and I wouldn't be caught dead there. Very true. But they do have a wonderful thread every month called Who's Hiring? And in there you have people posting jobs and also sometimes people posting, you know, availability. And they will always have a contact email address or the person posting will respond to you. So for my second job, where I worked at IBM, IBM had actually posted a, you know, come work for IBM, we're doing some stuff here, send me an email, this link, or reply in the comment. And so if you do that route, you are guaranteeing that you're talking to somebody, you're not just going to the black box. So I'd recommend that. If you're in React, Sean Wu on the reddit.com/r/react.js has a Who's Hiring for React Java specifically in there as well. There aren't as many job postings, but they're guaranteed to be good. And then, you know, if you're in the market for web development jobs specifically, I'd recommend staying close to web development and boards if you stray away from these two options. That is, go to codepen.io's job boards, go to Stack Overflow's job boards. Don't go to the generic, I put my resume in and I'm hoping for the best. All right, so you got a job. Congratulations, well done. What do you do next? So this segment I'm breaking down into basically three lessons that I've learned to further your career while you're at a job. As I kind of said prior, you know, I came into this industry just being completely self-taught, and, you know, imposter syndrome is one of those things that has dogged me most of my career. You know, so my first job, I was basically working for a nonprofit and got paid zero money, but it was a great resume builder, more or less. Then I went to Thomson Reuters, where I was doing, was part of a marketing web, a web marketing division, where we did mostly, you know, campaign sites, a marketing homepage, some, you know, other stuff like that. I got to play with Angular, Grunt, Gulp, some things like that. Then went to IBM, where I did React, Polymer, some no JavaScript, some native JavaScript, and then led the Carbon team. And now I'm at Netflix, where I'm doing React Node all the time. But, you know, it's just one of those things where when you come in knowing nothing, you're always trying to figure out, oh, what do I have to learn next? This can be somewhat of an unhealthy life cycle, but, you know, it's what it is sometimes. But anyways, to circle back to my main point, you know, there are kind of three things I've learned, given that's my context and my experience coming in. So the first one is try to specialize quickly. When I was first at my first job, I kind of did a little bit of everything, and that's good. You know, you kind of learn a lot and you get to go and touch a lot of things. But what I found is that if you are very good at one thing, in this case, as the show name may reveal, I became very good at tooling. And so I became very good at building Webpack builds, Grunt builds, Gulp builds, SAS builds, any kind of building and tools. Every team has a special place for you because every team needs some specialist doing something. When I went to IBM, I had kind of learned this at the back end of my first job that I should probably specialize in something. And so I had specialized in improving builds and got to IBM, and lo and behold, there were a lot of people there who have been in the industry for 10, 20 years and were very good at what they did, but hadn't really touched tools for a while. And so when I looked at their Gulp build, they had both a Gulp and a Grunt build and some thing related to Webpack, but not really, some Browserify. It was a mess. And so I said, okay, I can fix this. And I took the initiative to do so, and then, you know, promptly got, you know, shepherded up the band level, I guess. And so if you figure out something that you're passionate about or really want to do, super pursue it and try to take the initiative at any new job you go to, saying, I'm going to do this thing. It's paid lots of dividends for me. Okay, so my next getting ahead in your job lesson that I learned was that while you, of course, should become a master of your own domain space and know it thoroughly, getting ahead sometimes means that you need to work on these projects that touch multiple teams. This is kind of one of those, hey, office politics is a thing when promotions, and, you know, if they don't know you, how can they promote you? But you know, if you find yourself in the opportunity to go for, hey, I want to help build a design system, I want to help promote best practices across my team, or I want to X, Y, or Z, try to go for it at least for a small bit of time. There are a couple main benefits this comes with. The first is, of course, you get to talk to a lot of different people. Now, if you hate talking to people, this is a downside. But it's one of those things that, especially when you're new, this gets you a lot of experience that other people don't have. Most people don't work on horizontal teams. It basically requires you to do a lot of project management, a lot of clarifications, a lot of talking again, and it is sometimes pretty hard to do. But what you get out of it is that you see the company from a higher space. You get to talk to a lot of people. When there's a question about how does, you know, team A connect to team B. You suddenly have the answer, and you're a clarifier. And all these things that I found are super crucial for anybody trying to actually progress in a company. Largely because when people look for promotions and what makes a senior engineer, oftentimes is how does this person scale their impact across a company as opposed to across their team. There's a certain limit of, I want to get promoted in my current position and I will, you know, do bigger projects in my own scope. But after that, it's almost always about how can you take what you know and expand it across more people. And working in horizontal teams is kind of a cheat for this. You know, whereas prior you may have tried to say, oh, I built this great product and now I'm going to try to evangelize my product across to other parts of my company. If you say, oh, you know, I helped build a horizontal platform that everybody is using, it's a pretty easy way to demonstrate your impact across the company. So just to recap, working on horizontal projects gives you the opportunity to talk to a lot of people and make a lot of connections and build those bridges between teams that wouldn't exist prior. It enables you to become a clarifier of requirements and of why this actually matters to the business. And finally, it gives you a leg up on the whole, as a senior engineer, you need to be able to expand your reach across different teams. Okay, on that topic of being a senior engineer, it was one of those things that I didn't really know what that meant for the longest time, and I'm still kind of grappling with what that means. But when I first started working, a senior engineer to me was somebody who was an expert in all things technical. They were, you know, I had that 10x engineer meme in my head, but actually. And of course, as you kind of get some experience and you grow and you learn, you realize that a senior engineer does not mean that at all. In fact, the VP of tech at Etsy, came out with a great post actually in 2012, a long time ago, that I only found maybe 2 weeks ago because my boss sent it to me. But it's a post called On Being a Senior Engineer. And he actually renames the word senior engineer to be a mature engineer and pivots seniority away from saying I am a expert in a technical field to saying I am somebody who is a clarifier, is somebody who comes out and enhances other people. It kind of pivots into my previous point about being a horizontal engineer, but in this case, he wrote up a bunch of different characteristics of mature engineers, and I'm going to go through a couple of them that I found especially impactful for me specifically. And yeah, so let's go. So the first one that I want to call out is mature engineers seek out constructive criticism of their designs. I know when I first began developing, I had one go-to person, my sister, for who I got, you know, critique from. But everybody else, I didn't really want anyone to see what I wrote or what I coded. I just didn't want to have people know how bad I was, you know. And so this is one of those things that as you get older and you get more experience, you learn that everybody is struggling like you. And it's to everyone's benefit for you to say, here's my piece of code, please give me feedback. Here's my design. Here's, you know, the thought I had. And the key word I think that the Etsy VP pulls out here is seeking constructive criticism. So not only just, you know, writing something and being open to it, but looking for it. So asking for critique. So he uses a couple of different phrases like, what could I be missing? How will this not work? Please find as many holes in it as you can. All these kind of questions are great and they make you a better engineer. And so not only do you enhance the people around you by including them in the conversation, making them aware of what you're doing, but you're making yourself a better engineer too because you're finding, you know, holes and improving on your plan. Another great one I found was mature engineers do not shy away from making estimates and are always trying to get better at it. Now, estimates are one of those things that you will always have to do as an engineer. You know, your PM or your designer or your freelance requester or whoever it is will say, how long will it take for you to do something? And it is easy to say, I don't know. You say, oh, you know, it's too hard to give a timeline, so I'll, you know, come back to it later. It is hard to give timelines, but it is really important. It helps drive conversations, and it helps make people aware of when they can expect things to do their own work, and makes your team more productive all around. Now, something I've found over the years is that I now give two different types of estimates. My first estimate, when I give an estimate, I give two dates. My first date is an estimate to when I can give an estimate. It's basically me baking in a research phase to every project to say, I can't give you an estimate that I'm confident about until I've done X amount of work. And I think this is perfectly fine. You know, this enables you to give concrete, rational estimates and say, you know, I think of this because of X, Y, and Z. And what I found is that in my earlier career, I was too afraid to ask for research time. I was worried that if I kind of said, oh, this will take 4 weeks instead of 2 weeks, people will say, oh, you know, you don't work fast enough. You're kind of dilly-dallying around. You're just, you know, wasting time. But, you know, everyone understands that you need, not everyone, but most people will understand that you need time to fully research a topic before you can give some time, some information. So lean into that, lean into research, and then lean into giving better estimates. Another important point I think he brought up in this post is mature engineers lift the skills and expertise of those around them. And he also copies this one up with a one about mentorship versus sponsorship. And I wanted to touch on that part real quick. He defines mentorship as teaching people how to do something, and then sponsorship as enabling people to do something. And this one is really speaking to the concept of privilege, where, you know, when you're a privileged person, you know, like myself, I'm a man in tech, and so I don't have to deal with a lot of issues. The instinct I have oftentimes is to, you know, help people grow by teaching them something. But oftentimes, you know, it's not me or you or anyone else teaching people, but it is allowing them to have the opportunity to do something. And so I love this point of that, you know, mature engineers understand that difference and try to elevate people's skills and expertise by allowing them the opportunity to do jobs and projects. And so as you kind of grow into that role, try to think about that and move that forward. And then my final two ones that I love of this list, he has a list of, I think, 12 or 14, and I recommend everyone look through them all. The last thing I want to talk about is mature engineers are explicit about their trade-offs when making judgments and decisions. This just means that when you say, hey, I want to do something, I want to use a new project, I want to, you know, use React, I want to use Angular, I want to use Vue, I want to use Webpack, you say, I'm using this because of, you know, I think React is the most efficient library, while saying the con is that everyone has to learn React. There's, you know, some performance hits when you're talking about, you know, mobile browsers, mobile platforms, and just being explicit about why things might not work and what the risks are. Netflix is a memo-first company, so which means that for basically any project we write, we have to say, I want to do a project, and here's a description, and here is what I hope to get out of it. It's my hypothesis, and here are the risks. And I've actually started doing this for everything I do, so I've been trying to start a little app for the last like 6 or 7 years, and I've been having a hard time actually doing it. And I spent some time on a plane to say, all right, I'm going to write up a memo for my own project where I'm going to describe, you know, the pros, the cons, what I'm supposed to get out of it. And now that I did that, it actually helped me clarify what I was thinking. And then I showed it to some friends and they're like, oh yeah, this makes sense too. And so being explicit about trade-offs, writing up why you're doing things is beneficial not only for you, but for everyone else. And, you know, sometimes it can help both a Kickstarter project and then be actually keep projects moving. And then the final point I wanted to bring up with this list is mature engineers don't practice what he calls CYAE, which is cover your ass engineering. which basically says, you know, don't throw other people under the bus. You know, when things don't go well and when you call out a risk and it actually happened, you should say, yeah, that's on me. You know, I thought about this thing and it didn't work out and here's why. And what I've found is that, again, most good companies will respect that. So, you know, when I first joined Netflix, for example, I was terrified of failure. You know, when you join here, there's this outside kind of idea of the Netflix culture, which is super cutthroat. But it's not really. It's one of those things where they want you to say, we don't practice cover your ass engineering. You know, we will, if you fail, which everyone does fail, you can say, I failed because of X, Y, and Z. I know this, and here's what I'll do in the future to do better. That to me is actually one of the biggest hallmarks of a senior / mature engineer, where, you know, they are able to take the blame when things go wrong. So yes, that is, I think, a great summation of what actually a senior engineer is. Of course, there are many other attributes of being a senior engineer, but, you know, to highlight, it's really somebody who drives clarity and thought in their organization. So thank you all for accompanying me on my little retrospective of my last 9 years in this industry as I turn 30. And if you love this show, give us a rating on iTunes, on podcast, on any kind of podcasting app of your choice. It's how we get people to listen to the show. I want to give another quick shout out to our sponsor, Linode. That's linode.com/toolsday. A $20 credit if you use the promo code TOOLSDAY2019. Also, a shout out to our ever-present Patreon, Webflow. Again, they never ask for anything, but we love them nonetheless. They also have an amazing team. If you've ever been on Twitter and see and follow any of them, they're such a nice group of people, so check them out. And we will see you next time.